And such a beautiful evening it is. Pretty lucky, aren't we, to be here now?
Yes.
Yeah. Tonight, I'd like to pick up a few threads and follow them a bit farther through the weave of the retreat. And thank you, that's great. Okay. So we might get to breathe some. Not sake, but you can do it anyway. So this theme of unwinding or unbinding in the service of freedom. Last night I brought in a triptych of quotes, improvisationally playing off each other, and I want to come back to them. So the first one read, there is another world, but it is in this one. And to reach its full perfection, it must be seen and professed. One must seek her future state in the present, and this sky, not at all over the earth, but in oneself. The second one says, there is another world, and it is this one. And the third one says, there is no other world, not even this one. So these were a conversation over time and through languages, an unraveling and a reweaving of thoughts, rather dreamlike, yeah? And in fact, they seem to point to the dreamlike quality of life and also a bit the tricksterish quality of life, yeah? Sort of like Linji in our reading of yesterday saying, there's no Buddha, no living beings, no then and no that, no now, and therefore you're completely free to move in all directions anywhere. Yeah. Again, pretty dreamlike, yeah? And so we began to investigate what this is like for us, and we brought in some of our own collected dreams, which themselves seemed to be pointing to the not always so quality of life, didn't they? The quality of this dreamy life. So we had dead but not dead. We had getting ready to set off bombs in the bottom of the ocean. And even, you know, and we had, you know, going one direction in the dark and something coming from the other direction. And even as we talked about Shichung's 100 carts, you know, you take off the wheels and the axle and then what? Yeah? Well, in a dream, you're still rolling down the road, right? Easy. Still rolling, but don't ask how this can happen. That's not in the realm of the koan or a dream. And then we had Joshua Slocum's dream voyage around the world. Yeah? Alone, but not alone, right? With the skipper of the Pinta seeing him through a storm while he's lying delirious below decks. And with as much rebuilding boat as there is sailing in this voyage, yeah? Mm-hmm. As much break the boat, fix the boat, as there is actual cruising along. And having fun, almost dying repeatedly. You know, we reviewed one of those almost dying moments, but there were a bunch of them. Yeah. And he's like, woohoo! Oh, just remembered I can't swim. <You know>? So, and so here's Lindsay saying, suggesting, if you want to be free to die or be born, yeah? And then see this lone brightness that he keeps talking about. See this lone brightness through all the twists and turns of the dream. You don't need to be scared at all. We are at all times free, and our freedom is inside the dream. And I've been suggesting that in our meditation, we can practice unwinding, we can practice shedding, releasing our hold, so that we clear a field of kindness in which to meet what appears, odd and dreamlike as it is. Sometimes building, sometimes sailing, sometimes with companions, sometimes not. So tonight I'd like to bring in some things that Joan said at the beginning of a retreat about the practices of the night, because it seems to me to flow exactly from where we've been traveling. That's good music for the for this theme. Train in the night.
Yeah, stay awake, Kate. Here it comes.
This one doesn't sound too scary, though. Just going by. And so Joan says, well, let's take as a sort of working assumption that there's something really dreamlike about life, and that that's important. I think that then raises a crucial question that I'm not sure we always look at, which is this. If you think life is a dream, do you think the dream is dangerous or beautiful? There are whole philosophies built on answering that question. And how you come down on that question is really important toward how you see life, as well as how you see dreaming and sleeping and the practices of the night. And I would add, and meditation. Yeah? She goes on to say, does the fact that the world is changeable and transient and unstable and uncontrollable make it untrustworthy? It's a good question, huh? Does it make it undependable? Does it make it fickle or dangerous in that way? Do we need to protect ourselves from it? Do we see practice, perhaps without even being conscious of it, as a kind of endless magical gesture to keep away the transience of things? I'm going to repeat that sentence. Do we see practice, perhaps without even being conscious of it, as a kind of endless magical gesture to keep away the transience of things? Or is it possible that the very rising and falling of things, the way that they are transient and uncontrollable, has such poignancy and such tenderness that it calls to us in some way and begins to appear beautiful? Is it possible that the very fact that things come and go, that they don't stay, don't last, is what touches our hearts so deeply. Is that what calls forth such feelings from us? And so later she says, in the course of practice, we begin to understand how our interior landscape is dreamlike in exactly the same way, fleeting and transient in exactly the same way. And over the course of a retreat, I hope that the inner and outer landscapes will begin to feel continuous. That there won't be this sharp separation at the barrier of skin and bone. That there will be a sense of a dreaming in which we are all connected. Part of which each of us expresses in our own particular way. And in this way, we step out of our private dreams into this greater dreaming that's making the world around us all the time. I'll read that last bit one more time.
Yeah, please.
So, and in this way, she's talking about where there's not this sharp separation, right? The inner landscape and the outer landscape become continuous. And so there's a sense of a dreaming in which we are all connected, part of which each of us expresses in our own particular way. And in this way, we step out of our private dreams into this greater dreaming that's making the world around us all the time.
Who was it who wrote that? Or something?
Joan.
Oh.
Yeah. So, as I listened to this afternoon's reading, I thought, yeah, here it is. Here's an expression of that. And so I'd like to bring in at least some of the lines of Rilke's Ninth Divino Elegy. And and slow them down a bit. Sort of read them in slow-mo so it's easier to hear them. Because it is beautiful and dense, isn't it? More than a mouthful. So I want to do a little out of sequence thing, which is to highlight his beginning and his ending, because I noticed something about it this time that I hadn't noticed before. I think of this poem as an ode to the dream. Yeah? Can you see that connection I'm making? An ode to the dream and to our place in it as both dreamers and dreamed. Yeah? And so he asks and answers. You know, he begins by asking, why? Why? If this interval of being can be spent serenely in the form of a laurel, slightly darker than all other green, tiny waves on the edges of every leaf like the smile of a breeze, why then have to be human? And then he comes, maybe I will not go to the end. But he goes on to say, not because happiness exists. It's not about that, is it? That too hasty profit snatched from approaching loss. Not out of curiosity. Not as practice for the heart. So not, in a way, it's not about, I did leave out a phrase, why have to be human and escaping from fate, keep longing for fate. That has always seemed a little puzzling, and sometimes more than a little puzzling. But if you think of it in connection with what I was just talking about, escaping from fate as humans in the swirl of the dream, loose, where those locks get clicked open. But longing for, we are always asking for things to get resolved and to be understandable, right? And to be sort of regular, orderly, like fate, to have a reason, So we don't want to be bound by it, but we would, on the other hand, like life to be reasonable, like fate, And so then why be human? Why be human? Why have to be human? Isn't that an interesting question? Why have to be human? And so he says, not about happiness, because happiness is a little bit like fate, isn't it? It's a little bit like, I could go for this. This could be my goal, right? And then I will know what I'm doing. I am trying to be happy. That's my job. I got it figured out. I can't do it, but, I know what the job is, right? It's like we're ready to take the booby prize. So he's, no, that's not it, yeah? And not out of curiosity. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Not out of curiosity, not as practice for the heart, which you could do in any sort of a life form, he says. But I think he's saying curiosity is kind of too light. It's skimming, it's still skimming in a way. Although you hear me talk about curiosity all the time, but I think he's meaning just, I'll see what happens kind of curiosity. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, not just that. Yeah? Deeper than that, bigger than that. Because you need more reason than that. It doesn't hold quite. But because truly being here is so much. Where's that coming from? Not just up here, right? This is, now we're in the realm of heart mind. Because truly being here is so much. And get this next part. Because everything here apparently needs us. Because everything here apparently needs us. Now we're in the realm of the big dream, aren't we? This big dream is not itself without us. Yeah? Our particular expression in the dream is essential to it, is the way I hear this. Because everything here apparently needs us, this fleeting world, which in some strange way keeps calling to us. Yeah. So, strange way. It's not, we don't have an explanation for it, but we feel it. Yeah? We feel it. When we're walking in the woods, walking during retreat, we know that the tree wants us. That the stones like having our feet meet them. That the birds want us to hear them. We know these things, and we don't call ourselves silly when we're in the middle of retreat because we know them, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not asking for, we're not requiring confirmation because we already know. Yeah? Us, the most fleeting of all. So to have been this once completely, even if only once, to have been at one with the earth seems beyond undoing. And so we keep pressing on, trying to achieve it. Trying to hold it firmly in our simple hands, in our overcrowded gaze, in our speechless heart. Trying to become it. Whom can we give it to? So there's this sort of stream of musing here, isn't there? It feels to me like a musing about the trying, but also musing about just the movement of our hearts as we feel the weight of our love of this. And there's this theme that if you go back to Joan's question, yeah, if this world is essentially dreamlike, yeah, is it a problem? Is it dangerous? Do we need to protect ourselves from it? Or, on the other hand, is it calling to us? Does it want us? Do we want it back? What is this relationship that in which we find ourselves?
So when he says, who can we give it to? What's the it that he's referring to? Is that our human life?
Yeah, so it's that's interesting, because he says to have been this once completely, even if only once, yeah? To have been at one with the earth. So we keep pressing on, trying to achieve it. He leaves that open, kind of, doesn't he? Trying to hold it firmly in our simple hands. What are we trying to hold firmly in our simple hands? Yeah. We don't even know exactly, do we? What that it is. Just like in a dream. Yeah? Where often, how often in a dream do you find you're trying to find it, you're trying to get it, you've lost it, right? It might be your wallet, you know, it might be your glasses, it might be your car, you know. You know, there are certain themes, you know, for the it. Sometimes it's a person you've lost, yeah? And you're trying to find them.
Yeah.
But there often is this trying to achieve it, trying to find it, trying to hold it firmly in our simple hands. In our overcrowded gaze, we can't even hold it in our gaze, can we? Whatever that it is, we cannot hold on to it. Yeah?
Wasn't it the sense of being at one with the earth? Wasn't that what the reference was to? That feeling?
To have been at one with the earth?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe.
And fully connected before we lost that connection?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is the candle starting to burn the plant? I was wondering about that.
Yeah, it's been doing that for a bit.
It looked like the fire was about to erupt.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, you know, I think you could, yeah, You could say it's to have been at one with the earth. But I think pretty soon it sort of slips out of it, out of its locked into that, and it becomes, what is it? Yeah? It, this. You know? I think we could just say this. Or, well, you could stay with that.
I mean, one with the earth is... what could be bigger than that?
Say again, Carrie.
One with the earth, what could be bigger than that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I have no idea. I know what that is somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yes.
But I have no idea what that is.
Right. And yeah. Okay, so exactly. Yeah. So then, like in a dream, it kind of morphs a little bit, doesn't it? Trying to hold it firmly in our simple hands, trying to hold being at one with the earth in our simple hands, maybe. That's interesting. Or what are we trying to hold in our simple hands and in our overcrowded gaze? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in our speechless hearts. Yeah. Trying to become it. Whom can we give it to? We would hold on to it all forever. Ain't that the truth? Mm-hmm. But what can we take along into that other realm? Not the art of looking. Which is learned so slowly. And nothing that happened here. We think our memories are it, but our memories are just creations, right? Another dream. And we know pretty soon, underneath we know. You know that our memory is not it. Nothing. The sufferings then, and above all, the heaviness and the long experience of love. Just what is wholly unsayable. But later, among the stars, what good is it? They are better as they are. Unsayable. So one thing I love about this is the way I feel like I'm being invited to follow his stream of consciousness, right? His musing. And it doesn't matter really whether I understand it the same way he understands it. It's a dream, you know? Mm-hmm. I have to just let those words wash through me and let them take me where they take me. Yeah? At least that's the way I feel about it. What, above all, and then later, among the stars, do I have to know what that means? I don't think so. I can just hear it, you know? I can just let it come through me. I don't have to have a belief about later among the stars, fortunately. Tonight, later, among the stars. I can certainly agree that they are better as they are, unsayable. No argument there, right? For when the traveler returns from the mountain slopes into the valley, she brings not a handful of earth, unsayable to others. I love that because, you know, you can bring a handful of her, yeah? But have you said anything thereby? Not too much. It is transportable. I always bring rocks home from Nova Scotia in the back of my car. So I guess I go for the handful of earth approach. But instead, some word, yeah? He or she brings not a handful of earth unsayable to others, but instead some word he's gained. Some pure word. The yellow and blue gentian. Perhaps we are here in order to say house, bridge, fountain, gate, pitcher, fruit tree, window, at most column, tower. But to say them, you must understand, oh, to say them more intensely than the things themselves ever dreamed of existing. What about that?
So what about that choice of the word existing rather than being?
Yeah, what about it?
Yeah. Could you read it again?
But to say them, you must understand, oh, to say them more intensely than the things themselves ever dreamed of existing. So if you don't have to judge this or have an evaluation or a explanation for it, but you can just feel it. Yeah? What is that like? Can you remember? Do you know that experience? To say it more intensely than the thing itself. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because it seems like it's harder for something to be more intense than the thing itself. To me.
So, let's see about. Would you say more about that? It's harder for your saying of it to be more intense
than the thing. I mean, look, like the stars in the sky. How do you explain this unimaginable entity that touches your heart in some way? How do you,
if you want to tell, suppose you've got a little kid and you want to tell them?
They can probably tell it better.
I would have to show it to them. I think
that's that, you know, you would have to take them and have them experience it. What I keep hearing is that language just falls short.
Right.
You think that's what he's saying? So.
That's just what I'm hearing. I don't know if that's okay. What he's trying to say, but
yeah,
that,
me too.
That the actual experience of the thing that resonates in our entire being, our breath, it's. There are no words.
So that's the unsayable, isn't it?
The unsayable.
Okay, so listen again. Let me say this again. Perhaps, but when the traveler returns, he brings not a handful of earth. So he's not just taking you to see it, right? He's not just bringing it to you. But some pure word. So when you hear that next part, the yellow and blue gentian, what does that do to you?
Well, being that I have sight and experience of it, then I can feel that. If I don't have sight, if I don't know yellow and blue or gentian, it doesn't.
But until you had the words for it, did you have the same kind of experience that you have after you have the words?
The words are just yellow and blue gentian. You see it there in the field, and
maybe before you have the words, you have perceptions.
sensations, but to become that very thing, maybe we need language, maybe we need words to bring forth what is actually there before our eyes.
And I think that's the tricky part.
So what about
what words do we use to transmit this?
Well, what if you get it wrong?
What if you get it wrong?
Yeah.
The words?
Yeah.
Well, what would be right?
What would be right? Okay, so what if we go beyond, then maybe we need to go beyond a sense of right or wrong, right? So what if, so let's go on further in the poem, because I think he's going to be talking about this. So let's let that question hang a little bit. And, because it's lovely, yeah? So mm-hmm. So you say, he goes farther to say, perhaps we are here in order to say house, bridge, fountain, mm-hmm. gate, pitcher, fruit tree, window. At most, column, tower. So he's not talking about trying to make the most elaborate expression of some wonder of the seven wonders of the world, right? Gate, tower, yeah? But to say them, you must understand, to say them more intensely than the things themselves ever dreamed of existing. So that's where we were. What would that be? So hold that in your heart, mm-hmm. yeah? What is it to you to say it more intensely than the thing ever dreamed of existing?
Okay, so is he saying to say it more intensely or to understand it more intensely?
He's saying to say it.
That's to the poet's say nightmare. Them.
And then the poet writes. Right out of that nightmare, the poet writes, and you are touched. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep. Not because you saw the thing, but because you met the poet, right? Mm-hmm. Because you saw the poet in some way, and the poet saw you in some way. There's a mm-hmm. transformation that's gone on, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So it's no longer just the thing. The poet is not just handing you the thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Something else is happening. What is it? What does it have to do with the dream? Yeah?
And it's also like, it's not just why each one of us is here, but why we're here collectively.
Absolutely.
Because no one poet has ever described any scene perfectly.
Yeah.
And why quote things during this talk? Because someone said something of meaning, and you can build on it. And that's how we come to feel like higher understanding of things.
I agree. That was why I loved starting with that improvisational, each one ripping off somebody else's words and then doing something with it. Yeah. So there's that conversation. Yeah. And what about 'twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe? All mimsy were the borogroves, you know? Okay. Isn't the secret intent of this taciturn earth, when it forces lovers together, that inside their boundless emotion, all things may shudder with joy? So he's gone from language straight to that, right? So what if we're still talking about language in some way? What if we're still talking about expression? Isn't the secret intent of this taciturn earth, when it forces lovers together, that inside their boundless emotion, all things may shudder with joy? Back to what Ben just said. Yeah? It's not about just those two lovers. It's that the whole universe shudders with joy. Yeah? Threshold, what it means for two lovers to be wearing down imperceptibly the ancient threshold of their door. They, too, after the many who came before them, and before those to come, lightly. Here is the time for the sayable. Here is its homeland. I should have handed out the sutra books.
Well, I could. It's somehow, but it is more potent sort of hearing it from you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you don't mind my poking through like this and rereading?
No, actually, it's
really helpful.
Is everybody okay with this? I you know, it's always a little tricky. I don't like
when I read it, then I end up in my brain.
Okay.
When I hear it, it resonates.
It can come through. Yeah. Okay. So let's keep going. Here is the time for the sayable. The sayable. Is there such a thing? Uh-huh. As the sayable, what is sayable? Yeah? Mm. 'Twas brillig in the slithy toes. I guess is my answer to that. Glass of water.
So is what's sayable just going to be your interpretation of whatever?
Let's go on. Hold that question. Here is the time for the sayable. Here is its homeland. Here is the time for the sayable. Here is its homeland.
So, where were we? Are we on the threshold?
You know, he. In my experience of this is that he kind of drops that in there. So there may be something I'm missing there. Somebody else may, but. Somebody else may want to. I've got a thought, but somebody else may want to chime in here.
What is he just going back to his beginning point about being human?
Threshold. What it means
here
for...
as a human, not as a laurel.
Right. For two lovers to be wearing down imperceptibly the ancient threshold of their door about being human. They too, after the many who came before them and before those to come, lightly. So again, I think back to what Ben was saying too. Yeah? This particular. Yeah? Here is the time for the sayable. This, like us together, like here, us, in this room.
Mm-hmm. It feels to me that he's describing the act of procreation, and that act is everywhere. And in existence at all times.
Lovely.
You know, I was thinking of the, as you were saying that, I used to hang out with the amateur astronomy club, and we'd go out into whatever black skies around here, up in the mountains and so forth, and whether you're looking at the stars, you know, that's where the wow came from, because that was. It was reminding me of that whole experience. But after a little while, the wows don't cut it. And you're saying, see that red star?
Yeah.
And that links really strong with what you said about procreation. Because at that moment, there was procreation between Red Star and those of us looking and saying Red Star, and is creating something new. Because the Red Star was just sitting there burning, actually millions of years ago, by the time its photons get to us. But boom, when we see it, now it's brand new. And it wasn't just enough for us to even say wow, but naming it in the ordinary, it seems to make it more real than it could be. Than someone saying, look at the red, you know, here's a picture of a red star.
Why
or
am
just
I thinking?
Why? Perception. That's not the red star until it becomes named as the red star. You're just having sense perceptions, just sensations. It becomes the red star when you name it.
Yeah.
Why do I keep thinking about Helen Keller?
Me too.
Right. And that incredible moment when the water on her hands becomes nameable.
She's not alone anymore.
Hmm?
She's not alone anymore.
Yeah.
That's what happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so maybe that's where this wearing down the threshold, you know, that we wear down the threshold between us. Yeah. That we all are those old lovers wearing down the threshold.
For me, the two lovers are us, or no, not us, the sayable world and the unsayable world.
Yeah.
Those are the two lovers.
Yeah.
And they love one another, but there's a threshold between them that's dividing them. But because we go, I can't say a thing. And then because we say what we can, knowing we're not saying it, we're crossing the threshold and wearing it down until, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's better.
Yeah.
Boom. Whew. There is no longer separation. And then out of that bursts, red star!
Yeah.
Wow, whatever, but it's because the threshold is worn down.
Exactly so.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
So there's mm-hmm. the connection. So then here is the time for the sayable. That goes straight to there. Here is its homeland. Yeah. And you also then need to hold those two lovers as people, yeah, at the same time that you're holding it the way Andrew's. So don't try to make it be one thing or another, yeah? It's also us, yeah? Going back and forth across the thresholds between us, yeah?
I didn't think the leaf, us and the leaf.
Yeah.
You know.
Going back
wanting to be the leaf maybe wants to be us. You know, there's that mutuality.
Right, and the leaf is speaking and we're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, going across that threshold. Yeah, so then it gets, yeah.
But, you know, before human, because humans have language,
mm-hmm.
and there's humans cross the threshold. But there had to be a crossing of the threshold before that.
Mm.
The idea of words that they needed to be brought forth.
Mm.
I've had trouble with the anthropocentric nature of this the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like I don't think we are. I don't think it is that different than living as a laurel.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
fundamentally,
mm-hmm.
it's like the root of that tree out here.
Yeah. Like I think I don't know. I don't think we're that special.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and we are human and we use language, and so there. I think there's a yes and a no. Yeah.
The language is so minimal. I think. I mean, it's important, but it's a standardized communication system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, to argue that communication doesn't happen from anything between anything else, I think.
It's probably not the case.
It's not the case, clearly.
Right. Yeah, I'd say the Laurel has written its own Ninth Duino elegy.
Yeah.
Go see the Laurel to hear its version. This is his version.
Right.
They're not different. They're just, this is the version from the human because, well, that's what he was.
It's the human language, but what I'm really hearing is that there's this incredible language that is going on that's outside of our human blah blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reason I said that, because I was staring at that root, it has drawn me. The one that just stops at the sidewalk out here. Mm-hmm. Every time I walk by it, it says, "Look at me." And we both looked at that today. And so there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also drop in what Sarah brought in from the quotes from last night. It's also inside the human blah blah. Not outside only, it's also inside. Mm-hmm. There is another world, and it's inside the human blah blah.
Yeah.
Okay, good link.
So one thing that I know that you're not quite done. The first part, though, when we were talking, he was bringing up it. And he's almost like, even if you've touched it, felt it, trying to drag that, and then try to drag that along anywhere. He goes, there's something better to do. And that better thing to do is to engage. Even if you have engaged once and you thought that was a valuable, beautiful thing, if you start dragging on that memory of that, then you've changed it from being engaged to that memory of being engaged. Mm-hmm. You turn it into a story. And the stories are really pretty boring compared to activity, engaging, whether it's speaking or whatever. And so I think there's a real important part there in that front part. It's not to and that's one of the things that we're trying to unwind here. Whether we're trying to unwind an identity that I've had since 5, or carrying on and trying to duplicate an experience I had this morning. Because he's continually re-inviting us to continually engage.
I think he's inviting us to transform.
And that's, I think that's what he's saying, that's how you do it. You have to go out and meet the world and not just remember it, or remember a concept of what it might have been.
So what if we don't just limit ourselves to, even though he's talking in the realm of language here, of human language, when he says earth, skipping ahead, mm-hmm. earth, isn't this what you want, to arise within us invisible?
Say that again, please.
We won't stop it, everyone, but I'll read to that point so that you get the whole flow of it, okay? Speak and bear witness. So language being the way that humans do it, then I think what he's suggesting is do it the way that humans do it.
I don't know if that's the thing, that's the way that we do it with each other.
Okay, yeah. It's not the only way that we do it, but it, yeah, okay. So, yeah, it's certainly not the only way that
it
we do it.
It puts you in a very little box compared to what you're able to do.
Right, I get that. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens sometimes, though, is that we reject language as being too small and inadequate to our experience. And I think he's coming from a place of saying, this is something we can celebrate. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Yeah. And look what it can help us do. Look where it takes us. That's where I think he's going. And, yeah, I think there may be that in there, too. So, speak and bear witness. More than ever, the things that we might experience are vanishing, for what crowds them out and replaces them is an imageless act, an act under a shell, which easily cracks open as soon as the business inside outgrows it and seeks new limits. I don't know if that reminded anybody besides me of current events, but anyway, between the hammers, our heart endures, just as the tongue does between the teeth, and despite that, still is able to praise. Praise this world. Praise this world to the angel, not the unsayable one. You can impress him with glorious emotion. In the universe where he feels more powerfully, you are a novice. So show him something simple which, formed over generations, lives as our own, near our hand and within our gaze. Tell him of things. He will stand astonished as you stood by the rope maker in Rome or the potter along the Nile. Show him how happy a thing can be, how innocent and ours, how even lamenting grief purely decides to take form, serves as a thing or dies into a thing, and blissfully escapes far beyond the violin. And these things which live by perishing, know you are praising them. Like, as you said, that root. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Transient, they look to us for deliverance, us, the most transient of all. They want us to change them utterly in our invisible heart. Within, oh, endlessly within us, whoever we may be at last. Earth, isn't this what you want, to arise within us, invisible? Isn't it your dream to be wholly invisible someday? Oh, Earth, invisible, what, if not transformation, is your urgent command? Earth, my dearest, I will. Oh, believe me, you no longer need your springtimes to win me over. One of them, even one, is already too much for my blood. Unspeakably, I have belonged to you from the first. You were always right, and your holiest inspiration is our intimate companion, death. Look, I'm living. On what? Neither childhood nor future grows any smaller. Superabundant being wells up in my heart.
I got really lost with the invisible part.
Yeah. Me too.
Me too.
Why does the earth want to become invisible?
Because
isn't our language giving it a certain kind of visibility?
We take it within us so we can't see it. It is us.
Yeah, our feet are on the ground, maybe. How are we different from the earth?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
There is
feet. And so if you take away that what appears to be a division, you know, this, and coming from his time when he was writing, probably more pronounced, yeah, this division, me and earth, which we wouldn't buy in that same way, but I think it's an appearance, because I don't think that's really where he's coming from. So that as earth arises within us, invisible, if you take away that sort of language of separation, if you say, this, all of this arising within us, invisible.
This has a Diamond Sutra feel to it.
Yeah.
And that's a threshold that is crossed.
Mm. Mm.
But there's nothing else to say but earth.
Yeah.
So that's why we call it earth.
And where he comes really, you know, coming from why be human? Yeah, why must we be born as human? And what I really came to this with, and you guys have made it so much richer by the discussion, was the way he responds with, he doesn't respond with a because. He responds with, look, I am living.
You gotta hear that question. You know, in the past, you lived with this, why have to be human? Something comes across like a lament, oh, why have to be human?
Mm.
But it's really an invitation.
Yeah.
Why have to be human? You're born as a human, but you don't have to be human.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a path to not be human in your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seemed like that was, I mean, it was interesting to hear that as an invitation.
Yeah.
So, not lamenting or cursing myself because I am human.
Yeah.
It's like, why would I limit myself to this just because of the fleshy stuff?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the brainy stuff and all that.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, and I feel it differently, which is why I have to be human, because we're in relationship, because we're not separate, but because this is the part we get to play.
Yeah.
And you don't have to call it human, but here it is, and we speak it. And part of what we do is stuff comes into us and comes out as language. How peculiar is that? Invisible, you can't see
mm-hmm.
apple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yet there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Can I go really rogue here, Sarah?
Why not?
This is pretty rogue. How many in this room have taken LSD?
Dang.
Quite a few, actually.
But I'd like to. Well, LSD or something like it.
Or something, a strong hallucinogenic drug. If you take an LSD and you meet
You know the difference.
It's very hard to explain to somebody the experience of LSD as a drug. It's hard to convey in words. It's different than marijuana or cocaine or other drugs, but it's just a hard reality to explain with words. And equally to that is when you're under the experience of it. And many meditators, that was a path that they came to in Zen when they found out through meditation. You could achieve very similar states. But it's like, you know, Sarah's watch here. And this talks about, like, you know, essence, words, labels, whether we're seeing, what was it, distinctive, was it, or not, what were you talking about? You were asking her about something. It doesn't matter. If you're under the influence of the drug, possibly, you know this is a watch, but it takes on a whole other dimension or realm, okay? And all of a sudden, the word watch means nothing. What it does means nothing, possibly. And you might spend a half hour staring at this thing, it looking at the various parts of it, and you're looking at the little pieces there, and it's nothing to do with watch, Uh-huh. Okay, and the words are meaningless. Mm-hmm. The language fails in any way. You can't, you know, it's just meaningless. It's like trying to explain the drug LSD. I couldn't explain in words that you could understand. It could be anything, too. Okay, it could be this little mini Zophila here. Yeah, it's, but anyway, enough, okay? And I'm listening to this discussion, and it's also the dreamy part that kind of comes through, because there is a very dreamy part. I'm not encouraging you to take drugs at all. It's just that as I listen to this, I go, wow, this is really, you know, there is like this river under a river where all language fails, mm-hmm. and all explanation fails, mm-hmm. where words just belittle, and you know, it's just like, ah.
So Steve,
yeah.
when the ancestors reached there, why didn't they stay there?
Because there was no power. You've been there, done that. You don't stay there. You get it and you move on. Okay?
Why?
Why? Because I would like to think, as trying to become a bodhisattva, that's what I feel like I need to do, what I should do.
What you should do, why?
I can't even tell you that. It's like, you know, I volunteered at the Denver Rescue Mission in Denver, and I don't go there. It's beyond words. I don't go there to do anything. I certainly don't go there to be charitable or help old people. I mean, that happens. I mean, that's what it's about. But when I get in my car and I'm driving there, at some point it all falls away. Okay, it just falls away. And you just show up there and you do what's right in front of you.
Okay.
Okay.
So you don't have to take LSD to have all of that stuff drop away. And
right.
It happens pretty frequently in meditation. Yeah. Yeah. And yep, so, and in fact, it's what we've been talking about all week. As I've been saying, shed, shed, release, release, right?
And you know what happens with words, I think, often is that it spirals us right back to our attachments, to our preconceived notions, mm-hmm. to our bindings.
Judgments.
Yeah, you know, all of a sudden I'm bound by these words.
Maybe, and it also makes possible to help the people in that he's talking about helping, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Right, and I'm not saying words do not have value. I'm just stating that words can also imprison you in your attachments.
Yeah.
Even in how you speak to a person. It's my guess that when you're with somebody, a homeless person or someone in some kind of dire state, I've found that silence is the best antidote.
Absolutely.
Is that right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And when people approach you, you can see in them whether you should say anything or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just like,
yeah.
Let it be. Silence.
So that's an interesting conversation. So you might take this with you, you know, spend some more time with it. And let that be a conversation with him. Because he's saying, praise this world. Yeah. Praise this world. And you remember that there's that great poem by Zagajewski, try to praise this mutilated world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You must praise this mutilated world. Yeah. Praise this world to the angel, not the unsayable one. Yeah. What's that? What's that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why come out of that place where you don't need a word at all? Yeah? Why not just dwell in the bliss of the vastness?
That comes back to Helen Keller.
Yeah.
Because she had no words. It wasn't until she had perception linked with words that she could communicate.
Yeah.
when she could communicate, she could also have communion. You're talking about communion, Gestalt. You're talking about communion with people that don't want to be talked at.
Yeah,
you heard that. Yeah. But it's that you can't praise this world to the other unless you have some medium to do it. And from perception and naming, now you have some kind of medium. You can call that red star Mars.
Okay, so I want to propose a kind of, I want to come back to this idea about dream, the dreamlike nature of our actual life, okay? And this, actually, I wasn't thinking of as an exploration of language, although it's been quite interesting to me. But really as, if you remember, the other day we were talking about three bodies, yeah? And if your LSD example is coming to one way that we can experience the vastness, yeah? In which there are no names and no divisions and nothing that needs to be pointed to, yeah? And if we take this kind of use of language and the way language can bind us as a kind of the mud of the world that we have to get completely covered in dirt with in order to do anything good, and yet we get stuck in there too, right? Mm-hmm. Then what about that place that we could call Sambhogakaya, that we can call the dream space, where we go back and forth across that threshold? Mm. And to me, this poem hangs out right there. Yeah. Yeah?
I think of Frank's dream, actually, in this.
Which?
The dream you talked about. And in the dream, you couldn't explain something, and Sarah says, okay, everyone go outside and act it out.
Oh, that was Steve's
dream.
Oh, that was... Oh,
Steve was in the right part of the room.
Oh, that was Steve.
Yeah.
Well, I got the...
The so dream
Sarah,
where...
That's when you're seeing exclaim the thusness.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's the bliss.
Yeah. Rory, were you having this season?
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I think that, like, on some level, that's just human nature. That's just, when we see the tree or when we see the leaf, we just basically, instinctually, we want to define it, and we want to be able to present it to someone else. I think that there's like a conflict in our nature of like always wanting to like be that thing and be so simple, and also wanting to be able to express that feeling of I understand that this thing is so simple and that all people should be like this, and I'm gonna go out and tell everyone to be like the tree. Mm-hmm. And that's the antithesis of being a tree.
Right. Yeah. 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 And so we wander back and forth across that threshold all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Especially we wander back into the dark and the quiet when we're out there in the world trying to explain something, and it's so horrifically not received.
So that comes right back to Joan's question, doesn't it? This dreamlike, uncontrollable, yeah, nature of this world that we are living in, that this actual world that we're living in every day, Yeah, that is so much like a dream in exactly that way. Yeah, it's not, it's beyond our control. Yeah, do we need to define that as dangerous and a problem? Is that how we experience it? And or can we also some, and yes, maybe sometimes, and can we also go with Rilke to this place of utterly falling in love with it, just as it is, utterly connected to it, just as it is, willing to go with it in all of its unseizability, and name it anyway, praise it anyway.
In the last years of my grandfather's life, we'd be driving down the road, and there'd be like a bright neon yellow car, and you'd go, look at that yellow car. Mm-hmm. And he might do that every day, drives by the same place. And that used to drive my parents nuts, because they saw that as a sign of him slipping, or they couldn't really care less about the damn yellow car.
Right.
And in my thing is, my grandfather had lived his whole life like that. And he drove them nuts the whole time.
Yeah.
And that was a relationship of that kind of disconnect of my parents. Well, my father growing up underneath a probably not very stable childhood tried to make everything reasonable and solid. Yeah. And my grandparents were the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So even now, Sandy and I, we'll be driving around and they're like, look at that yellow car.
You're still connected.
This is a fond memory.
That's really great. Yeah. Well, my mother, when she got really old, when we would go anyplace, looking up and saying, I've never seen clouds like that before.
No. Oh my God. Mm. That's exactly what my mother would say.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, I've never seen a flower like that before.
Wow.
Yeah.
And being able to look at that now, it makes it easier to let go of my ideas of what they maybe should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I've smelled the vanilla in the pine trees at Bennett Pines, and named that. And that was a vanilla that's never been. I've never smelled a vanilla like that before.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. See, now all of us are the ponderosa pine.
That's right.
I'm the one with the ponderosa.
That's right.
We just smelled it, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Exactly. Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Whenever I have an opportunity in the forest, I mean, this happened in the Methodist cabin, we were there a little bit ago. I look at somebody and say, have you ever smelled a ponderosa? They're like, what? I was like, come. It's just what you have to do.
Yeah.
Can we have a quick aside? Is the fire over? Are they out of danger?
Maybe we're not in danger. Oh. We're going the other way.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so then if we come back to Earth, isn't this what you want? To arise within us, invisible. Yeah?
And now I get it.
Yeah.
You know, when Liz, I get that now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Isn't it your dream to be wholly invisible someday? Yeah. What, if not transformation, is your urgent command? Yeah. So it's not to replicate, right? Earth doesn't need us to replicate.
Right.
Yeah. This doesn't need us to replicate it. Yeah. But to be our own expression of it. Yeah.
So, Ben.
And just as a quick aside, this is very transpersonal.
Okay.
I myself, I would appreciate, PB, that you brought in communion, that word.
Yeah.
You know, what you just spoke to, I found it to be a parallel to Ancestor Ma's throughout all the eons, nothing that's fallen out of the deep meditation of the universe.
Yeah.
I would say nothing has ever fallen out of the deep communion
yeah.
of the universe. Everything mm-hmm. is always in deep communion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Or the deep dream.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, thank you all for playing. I want to say just one last thing about this dream, coming back to Joan's questions about and your meditation tonight and tomorrow, yeah, and our dream practice in the night, the dreams and the dreamless sleep, you know, the brightness of the dark dreamless sleep too. Can the invitation, I think, is really to ask ourselves, must I define this as it is, as dangerous? Must I define my life, myself, as something to be protected against, to be defended against? Can I consider the invitation to this communion that is always present, out of which we cannot fall? And the only thing that I think is required there is to accept the invitation. Yeah? Yeah. The invitation of this life just as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah? And that said, it includes everything. Yeah? Not excluding anything.
Lots of wells to fall into.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even when you feel like you're not in communion, you think you are?
Impossible not to be.
Yeah, it doesn't require you to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
It doesn't require you to be aware of it. That limits it, I think. I added that limited part.
You think it limits the communion when you're aware of it?
Good question.
Is that what you're saying by that limits
it? No, if we make it a requirement.
Oh, to be aware of it?
Yeah. Because then we're going, oh, I must not be in communion because now it's a requirement that I must know it.
Yeah.
It's undifferentiating. Mm. It doesn't matter if you're aware or not.
Or
if you think that you are or not.
Right. But there is a thing we can do to block ourselves off from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't have to.
Sarah, would you just say something about Tathagata in this talk tonight?
You just did. Tathagata. What would you like to say?
I don't know.
Teacher?
Uh-huh.
Who is your teacher?
This one. this just keeps coming up, and I don't know. I don't know. It's that comes up into our feet from the earth. It seems this is what makes it invisible and permeates and makes us see it and name it and exclaim it. Mm. But I don't know. I wanted.
Well, just that which comes forth, yeah?
Okay. That's okay.
Soaking into our feet.
Yeah.
Does Tathagata also mean the teachings or not?
Well, sometimes used as a word for the Buddha as expression of that which just comes forth freely, freely, freely.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. In free expression. And there is nothing that isn't. Yeah, just as
right.
In line with what Andrew was saying.
I received the teachings of the Sivadatta.
Yeah. It seems like Rilke, pitcher, tower, column.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's Tathagata.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Glasses, tray.
Before we end, would you go through Joan's questions again?
Oh, yeah.
There were many.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to hear them without trying to grasp them.
Yeah. Does the fact that the world is changeable and transient and unstable and uncontrollable make it untrustworthy? It's a really important question. Does it make it untrustworthy? Does it make it undependable? Does it make it fickle or dangerous in that way? Do we need to protect ourselves from it? Do we see practice, perhaps without even being conscious of it, as a kind of endless magical gesture to keep away the transience of things? Or is it possible that the very rising and falling of things, the way that they are transient and uncontrollable, has such poignancy and such tenderness that it calls to us in some way and begins to appear beautiful? Is it possible that the very fact that things come and go, that they don't stay, don't last, is what touches our hearts so deeply? Is that what calls forth such feelings from us? Now do you see the connection with Rilke? Now that you hear those questions again? I think that's what he's trying to express. Any one more thing that wants to be said? Okay, let's call that it for tonight.